This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 127, sponsored by Jim Haley's Universe, Foo Comics, and In Stock Trades. I did that with no preparation. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 127. I just made it. I am Josh, and I am here with
Ron.
Connor.
Fucker.
You know what? You said it separately. Just barely, but you did. iFanboy.com is a site about comic books. We do that site. We make it. It is us, but it is also you. We read a bunch of them every week. One of us is tasked with picking the one that they thought was best, and that becomes the vaunted pick of the week, where we come here and talk about it on the podcast. And of course, there's a nice written review on the site. Before we go, we're talking about the books that came out this week. Or we're talking about weeks, either way. The books that came out this week. So we'll talk about plot points, details, things like that. And you certainly wouldn't want to have them spoiled if you hadn't read your book yet. So you should do that. So let's get on with it. Connor has the pick this week.
I do.
Yes. So.
Who loves comic books? Raise your hands.
I do.
Woot. Woot.
Yeah. This is a great week of comics. I had a lot of them, as apparently is the norm now. I haven't had a week under 10 books in forever. And I think only two books I thought were not very good, whereas that leaves 13 books I thought were good to excellent. So
that's
that was a good week.
I
was really active. I didn't want to stop reading comics.
I never want to stop. Going
to go drastically off topic if I ask you what the two books you didn't think were great were?
I'd like to hear about them.
There were three. Actually, now I'm looking at the stack.
You liar.
It's worse.
No, two. I'm sorry, two.
All right.
Abe Sapien and Young Avengers.
Okay, what was the third iffy one?
Logan.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
And the problem, that there's a flip side. Lots of good books means when you have the pick of the week, it's hard because there's lots of books you want to recognize. You want to be able to honor all of them, but you can't because you've got to pick the one best one. I had four I really like to have picked.
I feel like Josh on iFanboy.com wrote about the iFanboy drinking game. I feel as if whenever we lament about having to pick one.
Whenever we qualify what our pick is.
Yeah, I'm going to take
it. It's not a qualification. There's no qualification to this pick, but there was four I could have easily picked.
It's just going, it was hard to decide.
Yeah, it was hard to decide.
Oh, my life is so hard.
I didn't say that. I said it was hard to pick the best one because there was lots of good ones. But the best one, the one that was my favorite, the one that I liked the most was Action Comics number 863 from Jeff Johns, who I didn't realize until later on after I'd written the pick that had last week's pick also.
Wow. This might be the year of Johns.
This makes me want to hit a button that like hits like applause. Like I want to do a moment badly. Like, it was Jeff Johns.
Last year, Jeff Johns was our writer of the year, wasn't he, on our year
he
intro?
Was, yeah.
E's continuing on. This is the end of the Legion of Superheroes story, Action Comics. Geoff Johns has been writing Action for a long time now. He wrote that abbreviated Richard Donner storyline that either never ended or ended in a mini annual that I did not buy. And then he wrote the Eric Powell storyline, which I didn't buy, but Ron really liked.
Ooh, that was great.
And now this is his first sort of, I think Eric Powell's storyline was still kind of gimmicky because a lot of it having to do with Eric Powell being the artist, and it was Bizarro World.
You just don't like Bizarro.
And Bizarro World.
I don't think it was Eric Powell. I think it was just you just don't like Bizarro.
No, I don't mean gimmicky in a bad way. I think it was more about Eric Powell drawing the book than it was the story. You know what I mean? I think a lot of the hype on the book was because of the artist.
All right.
Which is well deserved because he's a good artist. But
whatever.
So I feel like this is the first standard Geoff Johns mini where there's no other outside influence on it, and it was really, really, really good. And I don't have any allegiance to the Legion of Superheroes. I never really read any of their books. One of my best friends growing up, he was a big Legion fan. He was always trying to get me to read the Legion books. He was always pushing the Keith Giffen Legion books on me when they were all underground, didn't wear costumes. I didn't want any part of it. So I never really read them. I don't know anything about them. I know they've got silly names and silly costumes like all superheroes do, and they show up during big events, and I think they're kind of cool but in that sense. But I never really read any stories about them. But this has been one of those six-part stories where Geoff Johns has taken his love of all things DC and made me love them too. He's made them interesting. He's made them funny. The Legion of Superheroes has lots of members like the Justice Society, but even more so. And
yeah, even more so. I bought this issue, and I literally lost count of the number of Legion people that were – I'm like, there's another one. There's another one. There's another one.
It's a Legion.
By the end of these six issues, I know, Ron, you read this one but not the others. I really had a good sense of most of them, at least the ones that were really dealt with in the story.
Really?
I really – just through the interactions with each other and Superman, I really got a sense of who they were, their relationships, who was dating who was – you know, who didn't like who. And it all worked out well. He's one of the few people I know of that can write all of these characters, these books with tons of characters, and keep them all sort of all the balls juggled in the air. There were characters here that through the course of this series, they all had little moments. They all got the time to shine. They all had the little. They all used their powers to save the day, and it was really, really strong and really, 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 really good Superman. One thing about Legion is he's. The Legion is Superman's. They're his friends from the future. They first met him when he was in high school. They brought him to the future because Superman was a big influence in the future. He is like the basis of society in the future. All the Legionnaires are Legionnaires because of Superman, and he became Superboy in the Legion of Superheroes. And there's lots of comics about that. And he's able to go into the future and be himself and be comfortable because everybody there's no pressure on him. There's so many superheroes. The Legion of Superheroes take care of everything. He doesn't need to be Superman there, and he can just enjoy himself. And you can really see that. In this book, where he is more comfortable with them, he cracks jokes, he smiles, he treats them like they're like his old friends, and it's something Superman you don't get to see in a lot of books because he's got the pressure of being Superman in his regular books or his regular stories, and that was really good to see. On top of which, the art by Gary Frank was just amazing. He's one of my favorites, and even though he draws Superman to look like Christopher Reeve, which can be kind of creepy at times,
I do have to admit, I mean, like, I did pick this up based because I saw you put the pickup, like, in the middle of the day, at least for me. And so so I was able to see what it was before I went to the store. And so I grabbed it, like I said, I had no idea what was going on, but it was readable. I mean, like, it reminded me of being in elementary school and reading a Superman story, mm-hmm. Which I think is right because I didn't know who anybody was or what was going on. I knew who Superman was, but I got the gist of the story. So right. I think it was good on that. But the thing that stood out was Gary Frank's Superman, I thought was
fantastic.
It was fantastic. Yes, I see the Christopher Reeve influence, but more so it's less unrealistic. You know what I mean?
Right.
So at least the Superman in my head over the past couple of years has always been like the Ed McGuinness kind of.
He's not super barrel chested. He's not humongous. Yeah. He's got muscles clearly, but he's not like the biggest guy I've ever seen.
And he looks a little ridiculous in the pajamas.
Yeah, well, because Gary Frank draws clothes. He draws costumes that look like clothes, the quick plot summary is that Superman goes into the future because the Justice League in the future is evil. It's being run by a bunch of Legion rejects, people who couldn't make the Legionnaires. So they in turn wage an anti-alien campaign and get people to hate aliens, and most of the Legion are aliens, so they get driven away, and they convince the populace that Superman was not from Krypton, but was from Earth, and it was propaganda from the Legion that convinced they were all from Krypton. So everybody in the future thinks Superman was an Earthman who hated aliens too. So, and this is destroying the Legion because the public's not behind them anymore, and the Justice League is strong, and they're taking on the Legion, so they need Superman's help. And the problem was that when they brought him back, the sun was changed from yellow to red, which means his powers were negated, so he had no powers. He got shot in the hand, and he really couldn't do anything. And the
shot in the hand.
That's the weird.
Two blades.
So that was it. This is the final issue where he has to, you know, they save the day, and then everything's right in the world. And it was really, really good.
Cool.
If you want to see that beautiful art, make sure you check out the mini. Download that in HD.
Yeah,
check out the iFanboy Mini where I talk about this and you're able to show some of the art. If you haven't seen it from the pages, they're really, really good looking pages.
Yeah,
and then at the end, there's a little Final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds advertisement, which is the Jeff Johns George Perez miniseries from Final Crisis.
I saw that. So Legion is going to play a role in Final Crisis,
or at least in this miniseries.
Well, that's going to hurt my head.
Yeah, but
George Perez is nice.
And he's drawing millions of characters, which is what he does. But that has nothing to do with this story, which I thought was excellent. This might have been the best six-issue Superman story that I've read, possibly in 20 years. I don't know.
It's been a long time.
In a regular Action Comics Superman story, where they don't seem to be able to handle him. He gets handled well in Elseworlds books, in team books, in miniseries, and specials. But for some reason, when it comes to the main books, they never can get him. But I think Jeff Johns is the one. Jeff Johns and James Robinson this year are writing Superman books, and they said they're going to straighten him out. So hopefully they can do that, because no one else seems to be able to.
And they say it every 6 months.
Well, every time a team comes on, that's their mantra, is we're going to bring Superman back. And I remember that going all the way back to reading Wizard when Joe Casey wrote it in the early 90s with Jeff Loeb. And they were going to make
early
him cool.
90s? No, you mean the early 2000s.
Was it then, or was it
the
college?
Early 90s? Was those Death of Superman, Jan Jurgens, all that?
You're right. It was the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So. And I remember Joe Casey jumped on a table during the interview and pretended to surf it.
Oh, that Joe. He's crazy. Yeah.
Anyway, that was my pick of the week. It was excellent. There was a lot of really, really good books. I thought that was one of the few great ones. But there was another book that came out called Secret Invasion Number 1, which people may or may not have heard of.
This is the one about the
something,
the skulls. Is it?
So we should probably mention that on this last week on Wednesday, the iFanboy mini video episode that came out. All three of us talked about our reaction to Secret Invasion. So if you didn't watch that, go check it out. But how could we not talk about it here on this show? I mean, we should also mention that
this Secret Invasion number 1 at the time of this recording is the all-time highest pulled book on iFanboy since we've added the full function.
Yeah, it's
493 pulls at the time of the show. I suspect it'll break 500.
Yep.
The previous high was 420 from a Captain America issue. So this is as I suspected it would. It blew past that.
Everyone that I have talked to that has read this now, since it's been out for a few days, everybody that I've given it to read, everybody that's read it, have all been like, "Wow, that was really good." Like, no, not a single person has bitched or moaned about it, that I've heard, at least. I'm sure there are people bitching and moaning
about
it.
There are some on the website that have said that they didn't love it. I thought it was really good, and I thought that's a good description of it. It was really good. I didn't think it was great.
What wasn't great about it? What wasn't good? What kept it from being great?
I thought it was really good. I thought Yu's art was as strong as I've seen it.
Great art.
Yeah.
As we said, you know, that looks like he's got somebody else inking him, and
Mark
really
Morales is inking
pulling it all together.
Yeah.
However, you know, there was not a moment really that I was blown away. I don't think that there was anything where I was really surprised or shocked by any of the Skrull reveals, I guess.
Well, you don't have an affinity for the Marvel Universe. I mean, like, the Dum Dum or Jarvis doesn't get you.
Okay.
What are you talking about? He totally cool. does. Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, I don't think
that's
so. Because when I saw Dum Dum, I went, "Oh, Dum Dum."
No, but Dum Dum's, I mean, like, he's a side character. He's not one of the main characters. I think the one thing that didn't happen that sort of needed to is that none of the main Avengers.
I think it would have been too obvious. Although,
no,
Hank
but
I also,
Hank
I also think that's where we're
good.
Getting there. We're getting to that point.
Yeah,
it hasn't
exactly.
happened yet.
Yeah.
Right, but
that's,
I mean, like,
going to happen.
Yeah.
And that
sure,
will be when it.
I think we have to find out that one of those new Avengers or Mighty Avengers, specifically, I think it has to be one of the new Avengers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Somebody prominent has to be revealed as the Skrull. I mean, basically, at the end of this, I'm with – and Pym doesn't count. He's in the initiative. He's not one of the Avengers teams right now. Like, none of
the. He also hasn't done anything really in the last few
years.
Wait a minute.
No, wait. Hank Pym is Avengers Initiative. He's been leading that. Don't say he's not on Avengers. He's totally one of the. He's just not an Avengers you're reading.
I read two Avengers books, Mighty Avengers and New Avengers.
Right.
He's not on one of those teams.
He's not in either of the two main books that almost everybody reads that reads Marvel. Hardly anybody anymore.
But you can't
say
that he's not an Avenger or that he's not part of the Avengers. He is.
He's one of these.
He's not. He's not part of any of those main teams. The Avengers Initiative comprises 52 teams across.
It's focused on the Camp Hammond group in Connecticut that he's been leading.
Yeah, but nobody cares about those.
Well,
and I'm, you know,
it's
what?
True.
I'm not the only one.
I'm just saying, don't dismiss him. He's an Avenger.
He's not a Mighty or New Avenger. Therefore, he's not a prominent.
What I'm saying is, none of these characters.
He's been in Mighty too.
Yet.
Yeah.
Like somebody biggest has to be Carol Danvers or the Sentry or Wolverine. Like one of these you have to have that moment. And maybe they're saving it. But I think that's what I feel was missing when I look back on it in retrospect. And I don't think that when we did the show for Wednesday. I sort of realized that that's what I felt was missing. I love it that it was Dum-Dum. I thought Jarvis was a good touch. Captain Marvel keeps showing up for some reason that we don't know about. I thought that the destruction of the biggest thing in this was the destruction of the Baxter Building. Or is it the Four Freedoms Tower? I forget what it is now.
Same thing. Although I do have to say I moaned when I saw the helicarrier listing and crashing again.
That never happens.
Oh, the humanity!
I know.
that thing goes down more often than...
Oh, let's not do that. I think the reason why I didn't think it was great is the reason Josh said it, is that there wasn't a moment that blew my mind. Like, it was cool, like Jarvis and Dum-Dum were good moments, but there wasn't like a holy shit, it's Spider-Man, you know what I mean?
That
was the moment for me that was keeping the book from being great, was because I don't buy the ending where all the 70s heroes pop out of the ship. I don't think oh my God, they're all retcon. No, I don't think that's the case.
The thing is, in an 8-issue miniseries that's touching all the other books, stuff like that, they're not going to do it in the first issue. I agree that something big and something crazy like that's got to happen, but it's not going to happen in the first issue. As far as the first issue.
That's the only reason why this wasn't a great comic, why it was merely a very, very good comic, not a 10, but it was an 8, which is no slouch.
Yeah.
And the story, that doesn't stop the story from being good overall, but like I don't think the hook has happened yet.
Yeah.
Like this feels like part of the first act.
Right.
It's just this is before the credits start, and there really wasn't the big hook yet. But it was fun. It was good. I don't have any complaints. I'm not like, oh, this shouldn't have happened. This was stupid. Really strong, and I'm looking forward to reading more, basically, but I don't quite have
I think this bodes really well for it, but I also think that traditionally the first issue of these series are usually not my favorite.
Right.
Because there's a lot of setup involved. We got an email from someone who didn't sign it, but his name was BaleFuego@gmail.com. I know when we first read this, we were like, oh man, how long has Jarvis been a Skrull? How long has Dum-Dum been a Skrull? Well, he says he went back and was reading his old issues in preparation for the series, and in issue either 3 or 4 of New Avengers, Jarvis shows up at Stark Tower and says that he'd been on a, quote, holiday, and he is wearing a conspicuous green kerchief in his shirt.
Interesting.
So we're going back that far for Jarvis. And Dum-Dum, there was a Secret Invasion minisode that Marvel released on their website, which is where Dum-Dum is switched with a Skrull.
Ah, we should check
that
out.
So that's actually shown in their webisode.
And it actually appears as if the Secret War book where Nick Fury was last seen in, that Gabriel Del Auto book that was really late and everything. I mean, I talked to somebody at my comic book store who went back and read it and said that if you have the issues or if you have the trade or have the collection or you can, go read it. You know, because apparently it is going to tie into what happened here, so now I got to dig those issues out.
Yeah, Bendis said that in an interview online.
But what I thought was really interesting, though, aside from Secret Invasion, is that I don't know if you guys saw it in the store, but Marvel put out a trade of I forget exactly what it was called, but it was a collection of all the stories leading up to Secret Invasion that were crucial. It might have been called Secret Invasion Prelude or something like that, and it literally had Fantastic Four number 2, the original Skrull issue where they turned into cows. All the way up to last week's New Avengers.
Wow, smart.
And it was like $15 or something like that. So like if you want to get on board with this and you haven't been reading it and you have a couple of bucks, go buy that trade if you can find it. Because talk about smart on Marvel's part. I mean,
smart.
Yeah, I mean it's got stories from the past 40 years that have to do with Skrulls, and it's like, you know, and it's not that thick and it's not that expensive. So I mean, I actually thought about picking it up, but I don't
know. What's nice is the Cup of Joe thing at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very useful. I was, you know, normally I skip past that stuff, yeah. But I was like, oh, look at this. And they show you all the how long he's been doing. If you go back and you read the first page of Bendis's New Avengers,
yep,
there's stuff going on in that. That's amazing.
I think a big thing that we forgot about when we talked about it, when we did the mini and then we haven't talked about since is and which I totally forgot about was that the Illuminati series. And that, like those Infinity Gems, like Reed has the Power Gem, which is like let you do whatever you want. Like the Illuminati all have have one of the Infinity Gem. How that's going to play or how that's being used currently, who knows? You know, so
I guarantee you everything involved with that mini is going to come up in the series.
Totally.
I have I've been thinking about this, and I have three people who I think are definitely for sure not Skrulls.
Me, you, and Josh.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Spider-Man, because they wouldn't have gone through all that Brand New Day one.
Dear Lord, could you imagine if they made that? Okay, that's
He's awesome. I think he's definitely not a Skrull.
Okay.
Reed Richards.
Interesting.
Because he is the Skrull's main villain. Yep. And he's the one they are attacking. And he gets shot, but not just because he got shot, but he is the one they would be coming after.
Yep.
And Pym half him up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anything to do with Captain America. So like, this is not the Steve Rogers at the end of the issue and. Bucky's not a Skrull, and anything to do with Brubaker's story is not going to be involved with this because there's no way they're going to invalidate what he's been doing over the last, three or 4 years.
I would add, I don't think it can be Stark because the entire story has been his inner turmoil by himself thinking about it. So
but
why
ben,
would
Bendis did say that people are Skrulls who don't know they're Skrulls,
like the five Cylons. They have people who don't know they're Skrulls,
like Captain Marvel. Yeah.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
There are Skrulls who are in so deep that they have no idea that they're Skrulls, so it could be Stark.
One thing that I thought was funny, I'm going to add to your list, Connor, that I don't think this Wolverine is a Skrull because he was already replaced by a Skrull in the X-Men pages.
Well, there was another theory floating around the forums that if you look throughout this issue, certain characters show up completely in silhouette while everyone else is not. And in the beginning, one of them is Jarvis, one of them is Dum-Dum.
Yeah.
And then later on, the issue Wolverine and Sentry both show up in complete silhouette.
Interesting.
That might be. But then I think.
But what I was going to say was that there was a theory thrown around that the New Avengers issue with Echo, with Maya and the Skrull thing like that could have been a double blind to fake out Wolverine, and that maybe Echo already is a Skrull, and that was just a setup to throw Wolverine off, which would be freaking double fake outs. Which I don't know if I believe, but I was like, oh, that's interesting. So.
I think in order for this series to be really epic, somebody major needs to be a Skrull and not somebody like Echo.
Yeah, agreed.
Somebody big time has to be a double agent this whole time.
It's totally Clint Barton, by the way.
And Clint is not a big enough character.
Yeah, it's got to be an A-lister. Yeah.
Also, he's like a B-plus lister.
Yeah.
And also, let's get him out of Ronin. Let's let that be the end of this.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's off topic. Is.
Well, we could do a whole show on Secret Invasion. So we should.
We did. Short.
We actually did. Yeah. But it was good. And I think Josh, you summed it up in the mini that it makes you can't wait for the next issue, and that's what
totally
it should do right. So. Yeah.
Josh, the next comic is something that was almost a pick of the week. I know you liked it too.
I asked you. I was like, "Did Detective Comics 843 come close?" And I was pleased that you said, "Of course it was." I if you read this, there was basically since Dini's been on this book, Zatanna has showed up here and there, and she there's been sort of slight romantic undertones between him and Bruce, her and Bruce, and in this one she finally like just sort of acted on it.
Dude, that page at the bar was awesome.
Awesome. Yeah.
Awesome.
So good.
Because there's so many times where they just pussyfoot around things forever.
Yep.
And it was so nice. It's always so nice. It's what I call the anti-Kevin Arnold theory when when a character actually just fucking says what they want and what they're thinking. And I love that because they could just be all coy about it, but she's just like,
What I thought was really interesting, though, was the two pages where they're talking about it at the bar – and basically Zatanna, Zatanna's going like, well, did you ever think about it? And he's like, I didn't think that was an option, blah, blah, blah. And at one point Bruce says, considering our history. And I thought that was really interesting because not only do they have this history that we've revealed that they were childhood friends, but Zatanna wiped his mind.
Yeah, then the identity crisis,
which is kind of effed up, you know what I mean?
Apparently he's over that.
Yeah, or he forgot, or she did it again.
It doesn't matter. She doesn't wear pants, and that kind of throws off a dude's head.
It does.
Fishnets make things very confusing.
Yeah, I loved when she changed it, when she changed into something more comfortable and it just sweats. That was awesome. That was a nice touch. Yeah. So
you know what was a nice touch also was the reveal of the ventriloquist.
Yep.
Yeah.
Being somebody from his past that she almost snapped out of it. And I was like, I admit I've gotten bored with this character because they haven't really said anything about her, but it's nice to see that that's developing too.
Yeah.
And yep. That puts a whole other spin and a dimension. Also, I want to give credit to Dustin Gwynn.
Yes.
The book's been bouncing around since Don Kramer left it. And this was nice. This was exactly the kind of Batman art. This fit very well with the story.
I like what he did with the cover, and then I really liked what he does inside. Like, I really
He's great. And this is also, we should mention, a two-parter, because Dini's been known for doing the one-shot issues, but this is one of the few two-part stories that he's been doing.
Very cool.
But I loved everything about this. I loved the art. I loved the interplay between Zatanna and Batman. I loved the villain. I liked that they're hinting at this not just in Detective, but there was also that – I told you guys in the show, but the Superman and Batman comic where they revealed Batman's inner want, and it was Zatanna. And it was – I like that they're kind of hinting at it. I would love to have it be explored. I don't know if DC would allow it, but it's a great pairing. I think
Bruce needs a little vacation, as it were.
he needs some good to happen to him, and also it's a great pairing in that she's his polar opposite in the mystical realm. He's so not that kind of person, and it's a great mix.
Yeah,
I really like it. So you know, it's good. Batman, they sort of went through a thing where he's happier now, but not really. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, let's throw it. You know, one of the best times that I can remember when Rucka was writing it, was writing Detective. And Sasha Bordeaux, who's in Checkmate now, was, you know, they had like an interesting relationship, and that never really went anywhere, but it was always very good.
But it really did. Liked. I mean, they had a relationship, even if it wasn't a normal one. It was there, so you can have Batman have him be, he doesn't have to be the monk in the Batcave, and he doesn't necessarily mean to be sleeping with everybody, but he should be able to have personal relationships without it being screwed up.
Well, what's actually going to happen is that he's going to lose all his money, have to get three or four jobs, and marry a supermodel, and then they're going to have to retcon that up. It won't be interesting to anybody anymore. I don't know.
Yikes. Speaking of which, Amazing Spider-Man 555, the first issue of the Zeb Wells, Chris Bachalo arc. And for me, Ron, did you buy this?
I did. Of course I did. I've been buying it. I'm buying it weekly.
This is a weird one because for me, I thought this was far and away the best written issue.
Yep.
Even better than the Dan Slott issues. Also far and away the worst looking one.
That's really funny that you said that because I thought it was really well written, and I really have been enjoying Spider-Man. I actually didn't hate the art as much as I did when Bachalo was on X-Men. I thought that the villains towards the end or the Arrow villains or whatever were more akin to what we saw on his run on X-Men. And I didn't like those scenes, but for some reason the normal scenes I thought weren't that bad. I don't know if it was because Tim Townsend was inking it versus whatever was going on in X-Men. But you know, like I agree, I don't love Bachalo by any means. But for some reason I was like, you know, this isn't that bad. And I was liking the white margins like in Fantastic Four and I didn't mind it, you know. But I gotta admit, but on the writing side, I love the DB. I love the new editor. I love the exchanges and interplay between Parker and the new editor. Anything at the Daily Bugle is great.
Yeah,
you know. So I don't know.
One thing this issue had in the other issues didn't was moderation in terms of the writing.
Yes.
There was not a lot of hitting you over the head with jokes that they've been doing in some of the issues.
Yeah.
There was a lot of humor, and I thought his Spider-Man was very funny, but he wasn't over the top funny, and and the DB jokes weren't over the top. Everything was very grounded, but still very funny.
Yeah.
I thought that was very strong. Bachalo does not do it for me. I know a lot of people like him.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like him. He just, his style, his Wolverine was, his perspective is awful. I mean, it's just, people had weird legs.
The one thing I can't decide whether I hated or liked was on the back page and the letters page, the no prize alert where they admit that, the fact that Wolverine and Doctor Strange were in this issue and it doesn't fit in continuity. And I was like, okay, cool. They're addressing it, but then at the same time, they're just like, yeah, well, we can't explain it. So if someone else explain it, you'll get a no prize. I was like, oh god, you know. So I don't know.
And the other thing with the art is that they've had this established style from McNiven to Jimenez, yeah. You know, like the sort of realistic, cleaner style, and they throw in Bocciolo, and it's like, what the
I do admit it was a bit of a jerk in the other direction, so.
Was it that you just didn't like the style, or did you actually get lost in the pages? Because that's always been my problem.
No, I thought the pages were laid out much better than they have been, because he laid it out similar to how Hitch has been doing Fantastic Four with the white borders, the white panel borders, and like they're thick. They're like a good quarter of an inch at sometimes. So, like, the storytelling, there's no issues with the storytelling at all.
Yeah, Ron, that's correct. It wasn't like X-Men where you couldn't tell what the hell was happening from panel to panel. Yeah. This was you could follow the story. It was just the way he draws is do it for me. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, just personal style preference. I don't like this style.
Yeah. So,
but it was really, really good story. So that was that was good.
Yeah.
That was the best one.
Ooh, that's good.
When I was gone and on vacation, you guys talked about Kick-Ass number one, so I didn't get to talk about that issue.
Did you like it?
I loved Kick-Ass number one.
Did you like Kick-Ass number two?
I did not love Kick-Ass number two.
Why did you not like it?
I thought, well, okay, here's the thing. I'm trying to reserve my opinion on Kick-Ass number two because I don't know where this series is going. And I think where it's going has a lot to do with how I feel about this issue. I thought the first issue was really grounded in realism, which was the whole idea I thought of being a superhero in the real world, what would happen to you. Whereas I thought this issue had a lot that wasn't realistic. So either they're going in a realistic direction, in which case this was awful.
What was unrealistic?
Well, for one thing, the injuries sustained in number one and then through the beginning of number two to the main character, he would never be able to, A, get back out there on the streets, or B, take another beating.
Yeah.
He would.
That's the one thing that got me is that the first half of this issue spends all the time talking about the beating that he got and how bad his recovery was and then all the surgeries and the metal plates in his head and the therapy.
But anyway, here we go.
Yeah, and then I thought it was realistic that he had the moment when he was finally better and he was crying because he caused such pain to his bills to his father, and then burning the comics and saying never again, and then within one panel he's back in the costume on the streets, and I was just like, that's a bit too that's a bit too much of a jump for me.
Yeah, and then he takes a severe beating again, and if it's somebody who's barely held together by surgery, would completely fall apart and probably die.
But that said, at the end of it, when he's standing there and everybody sees him and kind of applauds, I got a little bit of a charge. So, I don't know.
See, it made me angry that he was standing at all. He wouldn't be standing. He'd be dead.
He beat
three of the dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, I was like, yeah, you beat him. So, I mean, in the middle I was, but then by the end I was still with it, so.
Just for a second, I thought that he was going to get beaten up again, and it was going to end up in the hospital. Exactly.
Which would have been funny as hell. Yeah.
I know, kind of would have been. Although it would have been like, why did I just spend another $3?
Yeah.
So. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But I kind of thought, I was like, well, that would have been ballsy. Or he gets killed, and that's not what the story's about at all.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it could be revealed there's something else going on here, in which case it'll make sense. But for me, if I'm taking it at face value that this is about realistic superheroes, then it doesn't make any sense, and I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what the next issue holds.
Number three will be a telling issue whether or not I continue on with the book. It's fucking beautiful.
Yeah, so is. It's really good Romita. Yeah.
It's really top-notch Romita art. So he's got some big panels in this issue.
Yep.
Really, really, really well showcases his art. And that is one thing that would keep me reconsidering dropping it. But, God, I don't understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
What I do understand is that if I were to get comics in Manhattan, I would go to Jim Hanley's Universe, which is one of America's best and most progressive comic shops. They've got the best selection of comic titles and merchandise and books and shirts and statues. Oh, Lord, the statues. That's what I'm saying. They've got everything there. You can find it opposite of the Empire State Building in Manhattan, or if you're on Staten Island, you can go to 325 New Dorp Lane. You can go to visit them on the web at jhuniverse.com or friend them on MySpace at myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe, which would be where art and literature meet. It's a great store, and thank them very much.
So now, I'm not as versed in the Buffyverse. We've established this.
Correct.
I'm still watching those DVDs. I'm slowly getting there. I'm a busy man. But this Drew Goddard.
Awesome.
Wow, can he write just like Joss Whedon?
Some might say better in the comic form.
Really good. The last two issues have just been great, and in this issue 13 that came out from Dark Horse Comics this week, the scenes with Xander and Dracula.
were fantastic.
Were like laugh out loud fantastic.
I literally laughed out loud a bunch of them. I laughed out loud at the "I didn't know you were this racist" line.
Yes.
So now here's the thing. And I know that Dracula showed up in the series. I wasn't watching at that point. I didn't see the episode. So apparently Xander and Dracula have this connection. He's what's he called? His
manservant or something like
his
that.
He's his manservant. Yeah, he's Dracula's manservant.
Yeah.
It was just – it was really, really funny. When the whole issue was really, really funny.
When they explain to Dracula that there are some Asian vampires with his powers and they're like, do you know any reason, would you? And Dracula's like, of course not. And then he just pauses and he goes, oh, balls. Like, that was just like seeing Dracula say, oh, balls, was just – it was so –
and then he's yelling, those filthy yellow swine. And I was like, really? And then he yells it again. And then what saves it is that Xander goes, you know, I really don't remember you being this racist. Like, that was able to say what we're all thinking.
The good thing about this book and as I'm watching the show is that, like, I'm hearing the characters' voices and it still keeps up.
Absolutely.
Know? Yeah, and so it's just amazing. I mean, this Buffy series has been fantastic.
Is Drew Goddard – is he a TV writer?
I have no idea. Yes. Is he?
I've heard that.
He's one of the Buffy writers, yeah.
Oh, okay. That explains it. So,
This was the third issue that could have been pick of the week. This was number 3.
Wow, cool.
How about number 4?
Number 4 was Scalped 16.
Look at that cover.
Yeah, it's a great cover.
I was just looking at it right now, and I was like, oh my God, that's good. Just so nice. You know, this is and apparently this is the penultimate chapter of the Dead Mothers thing, which has been like one day that's gone over 5 issues, I guess. Mm-hmm. And normally this would be cause to complain, but it's been really good, and this one was really good. There was a lot of word balloons in this issue.
This issue was great in that there's a lot of character development. A lot of people are growing. Dashiell Badhorse is the main character, and he's been nothing but the supreme badass through 15 issues where he hasn't shown much heart. He doesn't show much sentimentality. He's just angry. He's there to do his job. He wants to leave. But sort of mentoring this kid whose mother was murdered has showed a softer side to him. And he totally cracks in this issue where you see like a side of him we haven't seen yet, and I thought that was just amazing. He totally feels for this kid. He feels protective of him. You actually see him smile, which is not something you've seen before. And he gives the kid his arrowheads, and it's just it was really really nice.
And the same can be said of Red Cloud, like. You know, he's shown his side over the past couple issues, but specifically this one, like, oh, he's not all horrible. But
Red Cloud, I think, is the best character in this series, and he's the most complex character in the series.
Absolutely.
And he has the whole – he gets to show many sides in this issue as well. And you both – you know, both Red Cloud and Dashiell want the same thing. They want these murderers brought to justice. They just want to go about it different ways. And they're both – you know, under the thumb of the government, and their government's just as bad as everybody else, if not worse. And the ending, where something bad has happened to the boy, or it's going to happen, and then Dashiell races off. I was like pumped. I was ready to get to the next issue. I wanted to see what happened. I was worried for the kid.
Yeah, good stuff all around.
Been really really good. And that was the fourth almost pick of the week.
So I doubt it. This was an almost pick of the week, but we could not stop talking about Countdown for some reason. Countdown number 4. There are two things about this book that stuck out to me. Number one, Jamal Igel. Mm-hmm. Fantastic pencils.
Really good.
But then there's one point in about 4 pages in when so what's happened is that the Atom and Green Lantern and Donna Troy and Mary Marvel and everybody is back in out in the normal DC Universe Earth. And it's seemingly they've survived the Morticles virus and all this kind of stuff. And at one point, Mary Marvel says to Donna Troy, oh my gosh, is this nightmare ever going to end? And Donna Troy goes, gods, I sure hope so. And I was like, I wonder what they're talking about there.
Yeah. I read the panel, I had the same reaction. I thought, wow, I might have, if I was the editor, unless they're specifically talking about the book itself, I don't know if I'd keep that in there.
Exactly.
But I thought this built on the momentum of the last 2 issues, where the last 2 were really good. This one was also really good.
Yes, it's really it did.
Whereas now I'm really looking forward to. I think the dominoes are falling. Darkseid's asserting himself. Yeah. He's brought Mary Marvel over to the dark side, and I think all is not what it seems. I don't think they're on Earth. The Earth they think they're on again,
Although I do gotta say, there's something wacky about going back to your apartment, changing into sweats, and seeing Darkseid sitting in your living room.
Hello.
That was kind of freaky. Like, hello there.
But, and he talks like a Southern gentleman.
Yeah, he does. It's crazy.
And give it up for Cliff Chang's art in the back page with
actually,
the origin of Ra's al
Ghul. I mean, I like Cliff Chang, but I didn't like this. I didn't like it.
I liked it a lot. It was colored differently. Colored more like a painting.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't like that. Plus, I hate Ra's al Ghul, so.
How can you hate Ra's al Ghul? He's a great villain.
Oh, I can't stand him. Ugh.
I've never liked Ra's al Ghul either.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you guys?
It's the mustache.
He doesn't have a mustache.
Darkseid is. Listen now. He is. There's no getting around it. Darkseid simply is. Now lay down while I destroy
you. It'd be a lot less menacing if he talked like that.
I definitely agree.
So I'm very upset that I forgot to buy All New Adam number 22.
You should be, because it was fun.
Was it?
Yeah. All right, he's doing the total sci-fi superhero. Whereas I don't know anything about this guy, the Atom, which is weird because there's also Ray Palmer's also the Atom. So
yes,
it's like
I saw that, yeah.
You know, Mike Choi, is that his name? Ryan Choi. Mike Choi's an artist.
I went to high school with a guy named Mike Choi.
He's the All New Atom, but also Ray Palmer is the Atom in Countdown, so there's two Atoms running around. But,
so they found him?
Yeah, they found him.
Okay.
And basically what happens is this is the only second issue I've ever bought of the Atom. I bought it last issue with Remender's first issue. He's battling some monster that was coming at it that they had found in his blood that had gone full size and was killing people. And the whole thing was just him, was the guy running around doing science experiments, trying to figure out how to, you know, beat this guy with science. And it was a lot of fun. It was awesome. What the Atom, I think, should be, is fighting science beasts and using the brain to do that. And that was really fun. And then there's another Atom, which might be a third Atom, who shows up in this issue. So I don't know what that's all about. But
did he attempt to blind them with science?
Nice. He blinded them with science.
So I'll tell you what blinded me was I was in the store and somebody showed me a page from The Boys number 17. and
I showed that page to Connor.
And what's scary is that I knew a guy in college that happened to.
Okay. Anyway, so
fantastic.
You know what? I wanted to bring this up because I saw the cover. Okay, listen. It's going to get graphic now. Skip 2 minutes ahead if you have a delicate sensibility.
Or if you're under 18.
Shows what's going to happen, doesn't it?
See, the cover is basically Huey and the girl's name, I forget her, and they're kissing, and they're in a heart, and the heart is bleeding. And I think, oh, heartbreak is on the horizon. No, much more literal interpretation than that. he walks to the door after making sweet love to his newfound lady friend, and Butcher kind of laughs at him for a second, and you don't know what's going on, and then they pull out and... She was
his face was covered in blood.
Yes, his menstrual blood.
All right, I thought we could get around not saying it and just kind of nudge,
I'm totally
winking
say it. It was a total like lame joke that didn't belong. Except I don't really care because this was a really good issue.
But that sums up that whole series, isn't it?
Sort of, but you guys haven't read it. I've been reading it the whole time. We're on 17 now. You know, Huey is the finally the soul of this series. And in this one, he gets together with this girl. And it's very sweet. It's actually been a nice relationship, and they like met each other in the park, and they keep going back. And you know, it's a cheesy joke, but that's sort of in tone of what the story is. But there is a backbone of heart with this, and you know what? I've really been enjoying it lately. This one was really good too. It moves very slowly. Yeah. On the one hand,
I love Garth Ennis. I've just got no desire to read this book.
It's definitely been picking up steam. I'm glad I didn't drop it.
Good.
If you like that sort of thing.
I would prefer you not show me things like that when I come to your apartment ever again.
Seriously, dude in college happened to in the tower. That's crazy. Dave W. I forget his last name. Anyway. All right. So if you shop at a local comic book store and you're not happy with how they manage your subscriptions, you should tell them to check out FooComics.com, which is a website that allows comic book stores total control over their customer subscriptions and allows their customers to log into the website, pick their pull lists, which is a great companion to the iFanboy.com pull list feature, and helps them with their ordering as well as you know, generating reports and managing store announcements and things like that. It was created by a comic collector, so it's designed to provide exactly what the stores and collectors are looking for. And the great thing is that it's totally free. So comic book stores can register online and get started today by going to FooComics.com/iFanboy. And if you think your store needs a little help in managing their subscriptions, tell them to check out FooComics.com. All right, cool.
Normally in this part of the show is we go to voicemail and email, but we had a lot of books to talk about this week. Plus, we've got the Book of the Month discussion, so we're going to forego that stuff, come back to that next week. Next week will be Return of the Email Voicemail, Now Ron's going to tell us about his pick for iFanboy's Book of the Month for April.
Yes, so Book of the Month for April, as everybody saw on April 1st, was Cable Classic Volume Number 1.
I'm excited. I went out and bought it. I'm all ready to talk about it.
A little bit of April Fool's fun there for you all. Which is really funny, though, because I got a lot of feedback from the Cable review to people going, yeah, that was funny, but those stories are pretty good.
No, they're not.
Well, did you read them when they came out?
I read some, yeah.
The Cable with the goatee and the ponytail?
No, I read the old stuff with him.
Well, no, that trade only had one New Mutants issue. All the rest of it was all the miniseries that came out. That actually weren't that bad. Anyway,
but, New Mutants was enough. It was not good.
But obviously my review was tongue-in-cheek and really false.
Wait, you mean it wasn't the greatest comic of the last 25 years?
My favorite was, if you're a fan of science fiction, fantasy, and noir, this book is for you.
What's going to be great when you get quoted on the next volume?
I really hope so, yeah. But anyway, the real book of the month this month, it wasn't very hard to pick this review at all. I'm actually going to be talking about it also on that Fanboy Mini on Monday. Justice League International Volume 1. This is the hardcover collection of the Keith Giffen, JMD Matias, and Kevin Maguire run on Justice League that was originally published in 1987. This hardcover collects the first 7 issues, and something really interesting when I was writing the review that I looked up just to see, this series has been one of those series that's of legend, where people are like, oh, did you read the Giffen, DeMatteis, Maguire run on Justice League? And Connor, you can attest to this. I'd been looking for this for years.
Yep.
Right? I'd been looking for it in stores, all this kind of stuff. I found
Josh's wedding weekend.
Yeah, I finally find it in fucking Boston, of all places, in a comic book store, and a ratty copy of it. And for a while, my MySpace picture was a picture of me reading that book in the hotel room. The reason why I couldn't find it was that this hasn't been in print since 1991.
It's a freaking crime.
Such a crime. And even more so, this book was best known for the humorous take and that Giffen brought to the book, and kind of a lot of jokes with these B-level characters, and Maguire's fantastic, very expressionistic art. But what I thought was really interesting is that the book was, after reading again, recently, this month, the book was really had a lot of overtones and themes that are present in comics today. Like, it was kind of ahead of its time in the way the media is involved and all this kind of stuff. But also, it's directly tied to a ton of events that are happening in the DC Universe right now.
Yeah.
In terms of Maxwell Lord and what happened in Infinite Crisis and Checkmate and all these kind of things. All those seeds are sown in this book. So
absolutely. No, it's in a very – this is I'm unequivocal in that this is my all-time favorite series. If someone said you're allowed to have one run of comics and one run only and never buy another comic, I would say I'd want Justice League 1 through 60,
yeah,
which is the Giffen. That's the Giffen run. He wrote the first 60,
yeah,
and the Justice League Europe. But this is my all-time favorite run of comics.
Yeah, and so the fact that it's volume 1 in hardcover leads me to believe that they're going to reprint all 60, which is like
– they're not, because the volume 2 is coming out. I think that goes to probably the next 7 issues. Volume 2 is coming out in 2 months, I think, or 3 months.
Yeah.
The problem is, at a certain point, the book started as Justice League, then it became Justice League International.
Issue 7, it became Justice League International.
Right, and then it splits into 2 books, Justice League America, Justice League Europe.
Yeah.
And then those are all intertwined. They're not always, but they do cross over a lot for the next 40 or 50 issues, however many issues it is. So they'd have to collect all of those. It would end up being like 100 or so issues. I mean, they could, but I don't see it. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. Well, now, aside from the writing aspect of it, which is really interesting, in that Giffen did bring the humor, but I think DeMatteis brought in a great dialogue and really kind of grounded it. And that writing team was one of the great kind of writing teams of comics that we've seen. You don't often see an extended writing team, do it, for a long period of time and have it really work well. But Kevin Maguire's art is absolutely. I mean, we've talked about how frustrated we are with Kevin Maguire as an artist over the past, 20 years now.
Right.
I wish there was more.
Yeah. Know? Well, he doesn't really want to be a comic artist. So
right. Yeah.
But search it up.
And I know we've talked about it. I mentioned my review, but it's this moment that sums it up, is that, the historic punch in Justice League International when Guy Gardner is pissing everybody off because he's annoying, and finally Batman just punches him and knocks him out with one punch. That's like the moment that sums up
the iconic moment of the series. Yeah.
But it's not that moment; it's the reaction to that moment that I think represents Maguire. And I mentioned this in my review: is that Blue Beetle's laughing, is cracking up, the Black Canary's pissed because she missed it, Martian Manhunter's kind of smirking, Batman's all stoic. Blue Beetle is reaching up under his mask to wipe his eyes, to wipe the tears from his eyes. I don't think I've ever seen that in a comic book.
Yeah.
Like, that subtle aspect that, oh, wait, to wipe the tears away, he'd have to go under the yellow goggles and wipe his eyes away, and it's so clear as day that that's what's happening, is just genius. So,
this was a groundbreaking book, and it's amazing to think that this is one of Kevin Maguire's first jobs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
It's amazing. It's little touches like that he had in his entire run. He really seemed to understand.
Yep.
These are people wearing clothes, and most of the time the costumes are sort of ignored. They're not really people, you know, forget they're wearing them. They're just sort of there. It's an amazing book.
I was looking through this book because we were scanning pages of it, and like, it's hard to find pages where they're not sort of standing around a boardroom talking.
No, they're not. Yeah. I mean,
I don't mean that in a bad way, because first of all, I'm looking through it right now, and Guy Gardner gets punched. In issue
5, 4,
it's five.
Five, yeah.
Okay, he doesn't show. Then they all go off and do something for the rest of that issue.
And Guy's knocked out for the whole time, right?
Right. Issue 6 is Captain Marvel versus Martian Manhunter. The first page of issue 7 is Guy Gardner waking up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know that also that punch in issue 5 was prefaced by, you know, like a moment in the first issue.
Yeah.
Where Guy is like being a prick and he's like fighting around with everybody and Batman just comes on and you just sit down.
Yeah.
Kind of accepts.
Well, there's masterful plotting through this whole series. What people who haven't read the whole series don't know is that punch, he gets punched in 5. The punch changes his personality.
Yep.
He becomes a nice guy for like 6 or 7 months. And then he hits his head again and he goes back to being the old guy. But like they altered. I mean, there was long-ranging plotting going on. Yeah. Like it was stuff called back. And the great thing, I mean, this is sort of cheating because it doesn't take place in this particular volume. But like, people I know were commenting on the site that it wasn't as funny as they thought it would be because the follow-up miniseries, while nice, and the art was good, and it was nice to see the gang all back together, was really just a bunch of gags in a row.
Yeah.
There wasn't much of a plot involved in those minis. It was just a bunch of jokes, which is fine if you've read the books. It's a nice callback, but the humor in it is there, but it's also grounded in stories, and the stories have consequences, and it's funnier because it's built off those stories. But every once in a while, they would hit you with something serious, and when you've been used to jokes the whole time, so when something serious happens, somebody dies, or something really bad happens, you felt like you got punched in the gut with a hammer. You know, it was just like it was a perfect melding of characters.
Yeah,
I love this book. I love it absolutely.
Do you find that the Batman's I haven't had a chance to read through it again, but ever like just glance through it. Batman's pretty hardcore in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, does he have any – do they go into any of his humanity in this one, or does he just stay?
No, he jokes in it.
He's the straight man. He's the straight man for the jokes, but he would occasionally drop in a joke, and it would floor everybody.
Totally,
they'd be like, oh, my God, Batman told a joke. Like that – everybody had a chance to play in the book. I mean, Beetle and Booster were the two main, you know, humorer people. Batman was the straight – you have to have a straight man to play off of. Martian Manhunter was a straight man, but he would joke in his head. You know, like, everybody had a personality.
Yep.
And everybody had a place in the story. And everybody got a chance to be funny and got a chance to shine and got a chance to do something heroic. And everybody came through the doors at one point. I mean, there's a membership drive that'll be in the next series where they recruit new members. And everybody basically comes – Hal Jordan, Superman, Hawkman, everybody comes through the doors. Everybody gets it's just a great series. It's a really, really well written series.
Yeah, so it was great, and like I said, it was hands down the book of the month. If you're, and I said it, you know, if you're a fan of the Justice League, you're a fan of DC Comics, you're a fan of good comics in general, you need to own this volume of them all. So definitely check that out. And Connor, where could people pick it up?
If they wanted to buy it, they go to InStockTrades.com, which saves you up to 37% on trade paperbacks and all kinds of books. They got free shipping on orders over $50, and over 5,400 trade paperbacks are in stock and available for order right now. New releases are listed every Wednesday, and the orders usually ship within 48 hours at www.instocktrades.com. And our last book of the month, Queen of Country, was specially priced at 40% off, and you can find Justice League International will be specially priced as well.
So go check out InStockTrades.com and see the great deal that you can find there.
Yeah, check out Justice League. You will not regret it. You don't have to know a lot of DC history to read it, to enjoy it either.
Yeah.
Totally. I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
Nice.
I've read the book. No, it's great. It's a good book. I wouldn't have chosen this particular paper stock, but whatever.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to get it. I mean, ironically, of all things, I didn't want to get into the paper stock. I'm with you there. But
it works, though, because if you think about when it came out and the kind of coloring that they use and the style of it, it actually works well like that. Yeah. And it's not glossy pages, so you can read it in the sun.
And it keeps the price point down.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
All right, cool. So, So, want to remind everybody to head over to ifanboy.com where you can read Connor's Pick of the Week review of Action Comics or my Book of the Month review of Justice League International Volume 1. And it's also important to note that we're kind of starting from scratch with the new website, and we've had our fair share of problems and bugs, but we're constantly working on them. And one big one recently was the Remember Me function. Now is remembering you for longer. I know that a lot of people had some gripes with that. And also we've done some tuning to the server, and now the speed factor has greatly increased.
Yes, it has.
Yeah. So
slow clap.
Yeah. So these are the growing pains that websites go through, and we thank everybody for being patient with us. And if you checked us out about a month ago and you're like, it's too slow for me, come back. You'll be surprised.
Indeed. Yep. And while you're there, if you want to pick up any of the books that we've talked about in any of the video shows, you can go to ifanboy.com/store, and you can use that to get to Amazon. If you buy stuff from them, it helps us out indirectly. You're going to buy that stuff anyway. I know it. You know it. So why not help us out? I'm like the Hurley boy. Or if you want to sign up for a Netflix account, you can go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. Free 2-week trial. That would be good, too.
And if you didn't know about it, we put out every week, we put out a weekly video show called iFanboy, ironically enough. And you can find that at revision3.com/iFanboy or on iFanboy.com. And last week, this past Saturday, we saw we're talking about some books from the vault. And next week, the show coming up, we're going to be answering some emails. So, but that's not all the video for you.
Certainly.
No, every weekday, Monday through Friday, you can find the iFanboy mini show, which is a short form, 1 to 3, sometimes 4 minutes show about comics, all kinds of topics and things going on. That's every Monday through Friday at ifanboy.com or revision3.com/ifanboy.
You won't hear me call it a snackisode. Well, I love the minis, by the way. Let me just say that. An unbiased if you love them, you would want to go get a t-shirt. This is iFanboy on it, and this is Intern on the other side. And you can get those at jinx.com/iFanboy. Send in a picture of yourself. By the way, paper above and beyond with his picture.
Yeah.
Yes.
Forward on the forums. He better send that into Jinx. Send it to them. They'll give you stickers. Send it to us. Send pictures. Whatever.
Yeah.
No pantsless pictures yet, by the way.
Thank
Just
God.
Saying.
And if you wanted to email us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. Next week, we'll be back to your emails and voicemails, and every now and then they pop up on the mini video show as well as the regular video show. So call and write in. We love to hear from you.
Definitely. If you are not doing your job and hanging out on the web all damn day, how about networking with us? You can go to ifanboy.com/about and find links to all of our site and personal social networks, Twitter, MySpace, ComicSpace, Verb, all that stuff.
If you like the show, you can go to the Write a Review on iTunes. It's very cool for us to read, but also it helps people find the show. It helps make the show more prominent in the listing so people who are looking for comic book shows can find it. So if you like the show, go over there. You can write a review for this show and for the video show. We definitely appreciate every single one of them.
And finally, if you really, really like us, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations, and you can donate in any denomination you see fit. And we really appreciate the support you guys have provided to us. And it's helped us, with the new website, with the video show, helped us make more comics content for you. So we thank you and appreciate it.
Ron, can you donate in Krugerrands?
Sure.
What about rupees? Doubloons?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't
know. What about
I can't verify this.
I can't think of any extinct currencies from the
18th century. What about
wampum? Yeah, wampum.
I got a box full of beads. What's this shit?
What about pox-infested blankets?
Oh, that's awful.
What about can you donate mutton? It has a value.
And a jar of meat.
I would encourage donation of mutton.
We like mutton.
I like mutton.
It's difficult to cook.
Oh, Lord.
Well, you're just going to spit over a fire and you cook it.
You cut off some of the fat from lamb, it gets out some of that gamey smell that some people don't like. Just saying.
Lamb is good.
Yeah, lamb is good. All right. Anyway, so all right. Well, it was a good week, and looking forward to another.
It was a great week of comics.
Yeah, it was a packed week.
Which means next week will suck.
You never know. So, all right. So until next week, when we find out if it sucks, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I will be Josh. Still forever.
You're like Eeyore.
That wasn't sad. That was like Jay Peterman, but not good.
That was a little Eeyore-ish.
I forgot to do it correctly. That's better.
Production stills that have been posted on iFanboy. These stills are unauthorized, and Lionsgate is requesting that they be removed immediately. It would be greatly appreciated if you took down these photos as soon as possible. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.